We have on. We're about to accept upon ourselves the Torah coming up Sunday night, and we the worldview is that there are 613 mitzvahs. We have discussed many a times in this class that there's rarely or barely a source to prove to source that there are 613. But except at 613, when you go through the early counters from the Gaonim time, that's before the year 1000, and certainly most famous the Rambam, they count out. And they make 613
mitzvahs. Is part of 613?
Which one?
Pesach Sheni.
Pesach Sheni, it depends on the count. The Chinuch and the Rambam, I think, count four mitzvahs that are relevant to the Pesach Sheni.
It was given after the Torah.
No. It's still given, it was, well, sort of. It was given within Moshe Rabbeinu's time, the year two. Correct.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a general question in the Gemara, a very serious question, is how was the Torah given? Because clearly, the Torah was given at Sinai, 49 days after the Jews left Egypt, but the Torah goes till Moshe Rabbeinu's death, which is about 40 years later. So if you cannot, this is the question that the Talmud debates. Could they have given the Torah at Sinai till Moshe Rabbeinu's death, predicting 40 years? No. Did they only give part of the Torah at Sinai? This becomes a very serious conversation. But once we accept our 613, then we have to accept what are the 613, and then you have to list the 613. The most famous, I think, usage of the 613, or close to the most famous, is the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch, as we have said many times, anonymously written. They're not even sure when around, but around, say, we'll guess 1300, depends who you think wrote it, different opinions. And what he did was, he writes in the beginning, even though it's anonymous who he is, he writes that he did this in the order of the parashiyot from the Torah. Therefore, in Chumash Bereishis, you only have three or four, because the whole Chumash Bereishis doesn't have that many mitzvot. And he does it that way. He goes in the order of the Torah. That's the way he set it up. The Rambam sets it up. The Rambam and the Chinuch have the same number and almost agree. They follow each other on what is the 613. How they organized it was done different. Yes, the organization. But either way, the Torah clearly, in the first mitzvah written in the Torah, something we discussed, which we have to discuss, Kassel, putting in a link, is the mitzvah of procreation. That's the first one that was given either to Adam or to Noach, way prior to Sinai. Either Adam and Noach were obligated already in the mitzvah of procreation, and that we discussed in several classes earlier this year. And the final mitzvah, when you're going in the Torah order of how it's raised by the parashas, the last one is going to be Azinu, which is going to be the obligation to write, put in quotes, write a Sefer Torah. Now, when I say write a Sefer Torah, again, put in quotes, the Rosh, already in the 1300s, says that nowadays it is not limited to a Torah scroll on parchment that'll run you six figures, but even sponsoring the books that people use now with the printing, he was before the printing press, 1300s, but he says that now the production of books that people will use, the handwritten books that people are using in their time, because they don't pull out a Torah scroll, and we have a Talmud already, the production of those books can also fulfill the mitzvah. So of course, when Rabbi Hubner, this is a random example, is publishing one of his svarim, it would be very wise to fulfill the mitzvah. Instead of dropping six figures on a Sefer Torah, I will take five figures, four figures? I'll take even less than one figure to help production of a book. But it's brought down in the Rosh, 1300, that there is a concept of the production of books, physical books, to fulfill this mitzvah. And in a practical way, it works out this way. But that's just the first mitzvah and the last mitzvah. In Judaism, as we know, when you finish a Masechta, you make a Siyum. When we finish reading the Torah over the course of the year, Simchat Torah, we make a massive party. Why are we making that party? Is it because of the finishing? No. Or because of a brand new beginning? Because in Judaism, we're going right back to the beginning. When we finish Simchat Torah, in fact, on the day of Simchat Torah, we read Zayis HaBracha, that's the last parasha, and we immediately begin Bereishis. When you go to a Siyum on a Masechta, or a Masechta on the entire Shas, usually they start the next Masechta right away. So at the Siyum HaShas, they sell off who says the Kaddish, who does the Ma'ariv, and they'll sell off who does the beginning of a Masechta Brachos. And a couple years ago, by a good idea, Palm, they take big names, but the beginning as well. Because we believe in Judaism, it's a circle. There's no ending for Torah study. When you think you're finished is when you're starting over at a new level. But you don't know anything. Until we finish is when we first know it, as my father likes to say many times. It takes many years of learning to recognize how ignorant you really are. The ignorant think they know something because they don't realize how vast Torah knowledge is. But in our world, we realize it goes around. Now, the rabbis also, not me, we're talking about rabbis many years ago, possibly, depends how you read it, even 600 plus years ago, they say that there's a connection also when you're circling around on all of these things. So when you read, for example, there are svarim on Chumash written to connect the last pasuk of each parasha to the first pasuk. There are many siyums, speeches that people give to connect the end of the Masechta to the beginning of the same Masechta. Some will do to the next one. That's one type of methodology, the end to the next beginning, and some will go back to the beginning. On Chumash, literally, the last letter of the Torah is a Yisrael Lamed, and the first letter of the Torah is a Beis, Bereishis, and on that word, depends on how you do it, the easy way is Lav, Lev, which means a heart, that's the easy way, but I even quote from Rabbi Akiva Eiga, who says that when you take the letters before and after, it spells Ach, which means limit, and Gam, which means expand, because it's trying to tell you, doesn't matter how little or how much you learn, have the right thought process. But the idea is, as we're saying, that when you end, you start over. And therefore, they want to say that there is absolutely no hesitation, a connection between fulfilling the mitzvah of puravu, procreation, having children, and the mitzvah of learning Torah. Because then, since it's the last and it comes back around, it must connect. And we will do a few of these connections. Because, why are we doing a few of these connections? Because today is a famous day. Take out my phone. Do I ever do that in this class? I don't think so. A rarity. We have today, everyone says over. Today is the Shla Kaddish, something we've said in this class many times. In Judaism, we're very strict about nicknames. Very strict about nicknames. In fact, the Talmud spends a half a page describing Reb Meir's nickname. Was he Oiker Harim, uplifting mountains? Or Oike Hare Harim, does he uplift great mountains? Who cares? Either way, he's impressively smart. So, what we have is today, a famous rabbi called the Shla HaKadosh, the holy person. In the history of Judaism, handful of people get the title Shla HaKadosh, right? The Ari HaKadosh. The Yid HaKadosh is 1800s. The Al Shech HaKadosh, 1500s in Tzvas. The Shla HaKadosh was in Prague, then he went there to Israel. And he wrote a lot. But he also wrote a prayer that became famous to be read today. You must have got an email about this. The Shla HaKadosh prayer, which can be read at all times. I'm reading the English here.
About your children to be grown towards scholarship.
And say at any time, and especially on the eve of Rosh Chodesh Sivan, which is today. Did you get an email to read this? Don't tell us. Keeves, did you get an email?
I didn't see it.
You didn't see it. Okay. So it starts with this famous quote. And why am I bringing it up tonight? Because he, on the eve of Rosh Chodesh Sivan in 7 days, now is the beginning of Shavuos. It says like this. We're going to read some of the Hebrew in English. He starts out like this. In English, you were always, even before you created the world, talking to God. Right. Even a better English, right? You were always Hashem our God before the world was created. You are Hashem our God after the world was created, which we say every morning. And here it says again, Oscar saying, is this Oscar? Yes. The following prayer may be recited at any time, but it is especially effective on the day before Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Perfect.
So does that mean yesterday before
today.
Sunset?
We're going to go today.
We're in Rosh Chodesh.
We're borderline. We're still Erev. We could say the past. But some of us say Davin Ma'ariv and stuff. Maybe we said Sphira, so maybe it's already Rosh Chodesh, but at any time, but certainly today.
Okay.
Now, anyway, why is the point I'm saying this? So why am I bringing this up now? Because it says like this. Unbelievable. And the second paragraph of the Gospel. Two commandments have come from you, Hashem, concerning continued existence of the world. And the continued existence of the Torah. Mitzvah number one, be fruitful and multiply, procreation. And you wrote, you shall teach your children. The intention of both is the same. For you did not create the world for emptiness, rather to be inhabited, which is a citing from a pasuk in the Yeshaya. It is your glory to create and form and study Torah. We're not going to read this whole thing, but in this beautiful prayer that he set up, he openly says, Shlach Kodesh 1600, again, saying what I'm saying now, that there is an absolute connection between the first mitzvah of the Torah, he said the first, but that's in the counting, of procreation, be fruitful and multiply on the website, I think that's how you found it before we fixed that, and the final of writing a sacred Torah. Now, if you're going to ask me, okay, so let's figure out some connections, not only that, first thing is very simple. There's an interesting halacha. If someone did not fulfill the mitzvah of having children, never got married, never had children, he tried, whatever the reason is, he doesn't have children. That's mitzvah number one in this counting of 613. What does he do? You know what the Talmud says? One thing the Talmud gives, a recommendation. Teach your friend's child Torah. When you teach your friend's child Torah, it is as if you birthed him. Now, can I do that with every other mitzvah? Let's say I decide I have a good idea. You know, I don't know about you guys. I don't get paid enough, like we all do. And an esrig, a lemon, on the holiday of Sukkot, doesn't run for a dozen for $6, as you know. Esrig, you will say, depends on how we are. It could be a six-digit situation, as we discussed earlier. That says, you know what? I don't want to do that. You want to, I have a good idea. I'm going to go to Tuesday night class. I'm going to pick on someone here. The one sitting at Amitah, I'm going to teach you the laws of Esrig, and I'll fulfill the mitzvah. Do we ever have such a thing in our life? You could fulfill a mitzvah by teaching someone else? What does that even mean?
Yeah, of course, because we don't do sacrifices, but with our lips. Right, right.
That's your possibly that mitzvahs that are not applicable. Excellent point. Mitzvahs that you cannot do today at all, learn them to fulfill them. Which means Torah can be in subset. What that's mitzvahs cannot do today. What are mitzvahs can do today?
Okay.
Right? So, and by the way, just for that excellent question, you know, there's a famous question that it says if you learn the laws of sacrifices, you fulfill the obligation to be a sacrifice. And a question is asked many hundred years ago, is that let's say Mashiach should come tomorrow. Now, let's say some of us here violated some laws. We got to bring a sacrifice, a sin offering. Or we want to bring a Thanksgiving offering. We should do that as well. But I said, you know what? In the morning, I read the Mishnah about all the laws. Do I still have to bring it? What is this learning and saying in place of? It's a question. Does it fully replace it or is it only a maybe? So I'm saying if it's a maybe, certainly it's not the same as what we're talking about here. Here it's discussing someone who doesn't have children. What he does is he can teach someone else a child. They also bring down many, many, many songs that if someone does not have children, he should pay for a sefer of someone being produced. Didn't we just say that 5 minutes ago about a different mitzvah? When it comes to the mitzvah of writing a Torah scroll, the Rosh in the 1300s says you don't have to actually pay six figures and write a scroll on a parchment. What you could do, and you could fulfill the mitzvah by writing and producing books that will be practically used by the masses. That's in the law of writing a Torah scroll. If you're counting the number 613, that's number 613, the last one. Write a Torah scroll. The other rabbis say, for the first mitzvah as well, if someone, God forbid, is incapable, unable, whatever the reason, a million reasons why, and we spoke about in the early classes of this year, God forbid someone has children, they passed away, same thing. The idea is you fulfill it by teaching your child, your friend's child. It doesn't mean literally teaching your friend's child. When you produce physically a volume, you pay for a volume. That teaches people. So when it says teach a physical person's child, it's only if you're around and he's around. Let's say you're not around, he's not around. Let's say you're not a scholar. You can't teach someone else a child Torah, or none of your friend's kids like you. So what do you do? So what a guy does is he pays for the production of a sefer. In fact, many of the commentators, and Moshe Feinstein has a beautiful written on it, can you fulfill the mitzvah of having students through writing? Technically, part of the mitzvah of Torah is to teach students. Is it limited to teaching physically in front of you, or can you fulfill the mitzvah through writing? Nowadays, we would add on through, social media,
podcast.
My point is, that the fulfillment of the mitzvah of procreation, fruitful and multiply, and the mitzvah of Torah study are interlinked for sure. And we're saying they're interlinked because there's a circular reason going around of number 613 to number 1. But that's not even as simple as it is.
So are you saying if a father has a child that doesn't teach the kid any Torah study, just does secular stuff, eats ham, everything, is it as if he didn't have a child?
I'll show you. Excellent question. In fact, the Chassam Sofer writes, he died in 1840, the great Chassam Sofer from Pressburg, and he writes about this, about what you just said for the camera that didn't hear, is the idea of the producing children is in order to produce children who are going to benefit the world, inhabit the world, I think is what the phrase was over there, and inhabit the world means in a spiritual way. And he says this. And he says more, not him, someone else says, what I said before, no one asked. What I said before was is that when the source for the law of procreation was either to Adam or to Noah. Nowadays, we have obligations to non-Jews. Seven obligations, right? Is procreation one of them? No. What happened? So the Talmud says, procreation is very interesting. That was a mitzvah that non-Jews prior to Sinai were obligated in. But once Sinai came, it was removed from them and given to the Jewish people only. Very few mitzvahs like this. Could be Giranasha, not eating from the Sinu. Could have been that way as well. So there's a very interesting thing. But some explain why. Because before the Torah was given, the concept was to produce children. There was no Torah. But once the Torah came along, then the idea of producing children, the obligation is to teach them Torah. So since non-Jews do not have an obligation to teach Torah, might be a prohibition to learn Torah, they certainly do not have the obligation anymore to produce children. What do you mean?
Well, the animals also to produce.
Right, only in the beginning, probably. That's more of a blessing than an obligation. We don't obligate animals, but yes. But all of this stuff means, and this is brought down, the reason why non-Jews do not have an obligation approval, why don't they have the obligation, why not inhabit the world? We don't want to inhabit the world. We want to inhabit the world to bring godliness to the world. Bring godliness to the world, as you said correctly. And I think he even hints at it. They say that the Shlach hints at it. Oh, he says, but what he just said, it is for your glory that you created, fashioned, and even formed so that we and our offspring and the offspring of your people know the name and study Torah. Shlach of the 1600s. So they want to look into his words and say, oh, it means the production has to be in order to study Torah. And would mean, possibly, which we have on RabbiHelper.com, I think, we had a class early in the year, that if someone got bit as a child who was religious and went off, did we have that? Does that kid count toward the obligation? A person is supposed to have.
Does that person count towards the fulfillment of
fulfillment
the obligation?
Fulfillment of the edge to the parent. Because a parent is supposed to have a boy and a girl.
And a grandchildren, male grandchildren.
Clearly not someone's ability in a normal world to be able to guarantee success to children when they're having relations. Clearly not in the guaranteed to have a boy or a girl. Nowadays, with modern science, they're able a little better at this. But so up until modern science, for sure, maybe what are you doing? A guy can't have a boy or a girl. So you're right. That's the way it goes. But that means if someone's child, we discussed it then, someone's child born a Jew, a Hunkin Jew, then doctorate goes off, there is a question of those child still count for the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Because again, as Aliyah is saying correctly, when it comes to the fulfillment of the mitzvah of procreation, it is intertwined with the mitzvah of studying Torah.
Okay, according to what he was saying, why was Chizkiah punished for not getting married and having children? He knew his children were going to be Rishon.
Because Chizkiah was going with a prophetic vision that his kids would not be spiritually good. He could have had kids. He decided based on a prophecy that his kids would be spiritually bad, and he decided that's the reason not to have kids, and for that he was punished. If he would have tried to have children and not have kids, he would not have been punished. But he wasn't trying, and he wasn't trying based on a spiritual prophecy, which
I understand, but he's saying it's tied in, and his children were not going to be good, and maybe what's the point in having them?
Excellent.
Not to him, because children could do tshuva, too.
Right. It becomes a big debate. That Gemara is tied into, if you want to look it up, Baba Basra 60b, on during times of persecution, is there a leniency not to have kids? Maybe we should talk about one time. But that's it's not as simple as it's not so clear that, as Charles is saying, the persecutions could end, the kids could have their own repentance. That was his issue. But very good question. As well, there are only two mitzvahs that we sell a Sefer Torah for. We don't sell a Sefer Torah randomly because you need money. Oh, but two mitzvahs you can. To marry off someone, says orphans, probably orphans. No, and to study Torah. That's a Gemara in Megillah 27. Now I'll tell you even what's impressive, because of what Eliezer says. The Rambam rules that if someone has a child, he doesn't have enough money to support two tuitions. In the old days, tuition was expensive, not like nowadays. So what happened was, he doesn't have enough money to have two tuitions. So like every mitzvah in the world, you come first. Got to be selfish. But it says that if his son will be a giant in Torah, then he has to let his son learn. So why is that? Let's say your son blows shofar bet, and you have one shofar. He lives next town over. You're not obligated to send in your shofar before Rosh Hashanah. That's insane. You're not. You have one esrog. That's nice. But your son knows more how to shake an esrog, whatever that even means. You don't have an obligation to send it. Then why, by Torah study, you go first? Because the concept of having children is tied into Torah study. So if he's going to be better, this is a simple way of learning. Since he's going to be better at it, then you give it to him as well. And in fact, this explains why Ben Azai said, I'm not getting married. Ben Azai did not get married, according to the Talmud. And asked him, what are you doing? You're not getting married. He says, listen, I desire Torah. Well, we have an obligation. And there was a question what that means. That one of the, we do that, I don't think we did that class yet. And he says, listen, I'm just learning Torah. The rest of the world will fulfill the world. They'll populate the world. Why? Why is that? Why is it easy? So they want to explain similar game. Because Torah study and children are intertwined together. It's the only one of these mitzvahs you can do it for. You can't say, I want to study, so I'm not shaking my lulav today. No. You study Torah in order to fulfill mitzvahs, practically speaking. You never could say, I want to study instead of fulfilling a mitzvah. Except, potentially, having children. Why? Because the children and the Torah are directly interconnected with each other. So we have an idea here. We have clearly an idea here. And I'll tell you what's amazing. But I'm going to read Jewish Shulchan Aruch. A practical law, very interesting. Number 3 in Ebenezer says, when are you obligated to mitzvahs? At what age does someone become obligated to mitzvahs? Bar mitzvah, 13 years old. And a girl, 12. We read you, that means at 13, you're biblically obligated. Lulav, sukkah, matzah, fasting, tefillin, davening, Torah, it's all there. There goes the law. Mitzvah, kaladam, there's a mitzvah on each person. Sheyisa isha, you should get married in order to produce children when he's 18 years old. But when he's 18 years old. But the question comes up, since what type of mitzvah is delayed? Doesn't start at 13. Every mitzvah starts at 13. Now he adds on, by the way, the hamagdim, if someone is early and gets married at 13, he did a better job. So the Shulchan Aruch rules that the mitzvah is at 18, but you can do it early. But that's the Shulchan Aruch 1500s. The Abu Drum, earlier, he says, no. There is no obligation to get married. None. You do not fulfill a mitzvah. According to Shulchan Aruch, you're married at 13, you're fulfilling a mitzvah. Abu Drum says, no. The mitzvah begins at 18. Well, what's 18? Okay, why? Every mitzvah starts at 13. He said, no. Because there's no mitzvah to try to have children until Torah study comes first. The connection again. And Torah study, the Mishnah says, if we remember, is certain ages. At 15, you start learning Talmud. So he says you need 3 years under your belt in Talmudic study before you can complete that mitzvah, and then starts marriage and children. Which means, again, according to him, there's no point in doing it before 18. Not agreeing with this statement. If you're before and you go, no, Torah study and this are connected, and Torah study supersedes it, like Ben Azai, who didn't get married, and the guy 15. Now, Chaskel's asking the question, what do you mean? But it says in the Talmud, you need 5 years of production to prove Torah. 5 years of production, not 3 years. So, the first Chabatska Rebbe asked the question. The Baal HaTanya asked this question. He said, wait a second. Rabbi Avudrom, a guy starts learning at 15, like the Mishnah says to learn, and he gets married at 18, and you said correctly 3 years of learning, but you needed 5 years of learning. So he asked, right away, what do you, how did Avudrom get from, I like the idea, Torah study supersedes marriage, maybe disagree, but okay, but how did you get from 15 to 18? It should be 20. He says that really, it's 5 years. But you need 3 pure years of nothing on your head. No wife, no children, no problems of earning a living. And when you get married, until it all takes on, the honeymoon phase is for 2 years. You don't have 2 kids till 2 years for sure. So and you don't have to worry about that much about, he writes about the first Rebbe, writes. And therefore, he meant 3 years of pure learning, but added 2 years means 5 years of learning. The Kleisenberger Rebbe and the Torah community, they want to say that the mitzvah actually only begins at 20 years old. And the rabbis decided to make it earlier and said 18 is allowed. But really it's 20. So we have an unbelievable thing here. They're proving again that the mitzvah of procreation, number one in the list of the 613, and the mitzvah of Torah study, the last one of the 613, are intertwined in a very serious way. What we know from that is that this is based on the idea that we're always circling around, always starting over, always learning. And in the yearly cycle, Shavuos begins next week. And we always want to start, it's considered judgment day for Torah study. Shavuos is a Rosh Hashanah for Torah study. So right now we're at the end of the Torah study year. We have different New Years. We've discussed in the past. There's different New Years in non-religious law, right? There's January 1st. There's the tax year. There's the business tax year. There's the Chaskel Sages school year, I was about to say. according to those gamblers, this football season year, when it begins, baseball season, right? There's different New Year's. Judaism also. The New Year's for Torah study is Shavuos night. We're at the end of the year now. Hopefully, we still have time to do a lot more by next Sunday night. But recognize, starting a new, brand new year, brand new Torah study. We connect the end to the beginning, and hopefully have another great year of Torah study. But just in case you didn't, you can sponsor a book in 5 days.